By the powers vested in me, by the Federal Communications Commission, I command you to get on the microphone in a serious manner and continue this broadcast.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights, everybody. Oh, we've had a great day. What a gorgeous, gorgeous day in Seattle. You know, it's mid-March. It's not the Ides of March. That's tomorrow. That's right? Today's Pi Day. 314. Happy Pi Day, everybody. Pi Day was just created by the math industry to sell more math, though. I'm a little cynical on that one. Tomorrow is the Ides of March, where you'll see 1,000 people with a picture of a Caesar's dressing bottle with a knife stuck through the back. And you people who know anything about literature will get it. Mm-hmm. But most people go like, what? Frank's going to be like, he gets it. Frank's like, yeah, don't look at me. I got it. And, of course, Friday is St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, there we go.
This could be the most festive week of the year.
For the O'Neill family.
For the O'Neill family. Oh, you don't got something against St. Pat's?
Oh, no. Okay.
Okay. I mean, three holidays in one week?
Yeah.
Not that I'm counting pie today. I'm reaching.
There was no pie here, by the way.
I noticed that. I'm thinking, really, what a letdown. No donuts, no pie, no nothing? Mm-mm. Anyway, I hope you guys had a wonderful sunny day. It was in the 50s today, right? Did it hit? It felt warmer than 50.
It's 49 now, so it must have been.
It's lovely out. I hope you guys enjoyed your Tuesday. I would like to welcome Frank Summerall to the show. Lisa Brooks is going to join us as well. I kind of played a little bit in the Oscar afterglow last night mm-hmm. on Cairo Nights, but I wanted to get Frank to come in and get your take on the 95th Oscars Sunday night. And host Jimmy Kimmel and everything that ensued and didn't ensue.
Yeah, it was an interesting show by the fact that it wasn't all that interesting. I mean, I honestly thought it was kind of a snoozer, and that's no discredit to Jimmy Kimmel, because I actually thought he did a pretty good job. Not everything worked for me, but more things worked for me than did not.
Yeah, yeah.
The Pauly Shore gag, you know, the little gag at the end. There's some good stuff he had in there.
I did love the Pauly Shore gag. And the fact that Brendan Fraser and his name still escapes me to this day, I do apologize.
Kehui Kwan.
Yeah. Thank you.
And since we're just on this now, but I thought Kimmel had the best point of the night, which was, hey, James Cameron and Tom Cruise, the guys who've been begging us to go back to movies, where are you?
Where are you? So let's start with that. Where was Tom Cruise?
He's probably filming Mission Impossible.
Well, there's believe it or not, we love. You know, rumors, and so much in this country. There are three different rumors as to why Tom Cruise wasn't in attendance at the Oscars. And I don't think any of them nailed the right answer. I think I've got the right answer.
Okay.
The big three are that Tom Cruise was working, filming Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 2. And he was busy filming and couldn't make it to the Oscars.
Weak excuse, but okay.
Well, you know, working might be the best excuse. The second excuse is that he couldn't be so close to Nicole Kidman.
Oh, he has shown up before. I agree.
But apparently there's fresh drama about Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise.
I don't know about that, but I can make up something real quick.
Please do.
Okay.
We got 3 hours to fill. Make up as much as you want.
There was a great gag as well from Kimmel about these very bizarre Nicole Kidman AMC ads.
About when she was in the theater?
Where she just is in the theater and she just stares at old movies. And so they made fun of that a little bit. When I saw Top Gun Maverick in a theater, that was the first movie of this recent trend where the actors and the stars talk to the audience for 90 seconds before the movie starts. And I don't know if it was Wesley Morris from the New York Times or someone, I think, wrote a tweet saying, well, there was no way Cruise was going to have Nicole Kidman lead up into his movie. He had to jump in the middle. So I could absolutely see him doing something weird like that, and that being his reason.
The third rumor is that he was worried about the Judd Apatow factor, that he was the brunt of so many jokes from the host that was at the – not the Golden Globes. What's the Golden Globes? The Golden Globes or Directors Guild. Anyway, they were worried about Tom Cruise jokes from Jimmy Kimmel.
Huh.
And he didn't want to be out there and be part of any kind of Scientology jokes or special effects removing Tom's wrinkle jokes or those kind of things. That he didn't want to be near his ex-wife, didn't want to be the brunt of jokes, and was too busy working to be there.
But you know what the real reason is.
I think they snubbed him. He snubbed them. No best actor nomination for Tom Cruise. For Maverick, he said, fine, you don't need me, I don't need you.
Well, and he also, I think, has a pretty hairy relationship with the Oscars. He's 0-3.
Yeah.
probably should have won one of those. Those are some pretty big ones that he did where he loses to Jeffrey Rush in Shine or something.
What was that for? Which was fantastic.
Sure, it was. He was nominated
three
times. It was for Born on the 4th of July.
Okay, which was great.
Yeah.
Jerry Maguire.
Which was great.
And then the supporting role.
Oh, I don't even know. Vanell Sky or something like that?
No, it came after Vanell Sky. Why am I blanking on the name? Hold on, let me look up. It's a Paul Thomas Anderson movie.
He should have won for Born on the 4th of July. He was excellent in that. That was probably his best acting.
He was fantastic in that, yeah. And I thought Jerry Maguire was fantastic. You know, was he just playing Tom Cruise?
Yeah, maybe. He was just playing Tom Cruise.
Maybe, but he was great.
Who else could do that?
And his co-star got the Oscar for
Magnolia.
Best Supporting Actor.
Magnolia.
That was, yeah, okay. But that was...
She is... He's pretty amazing in that
movie.
Yeah,
that was pretty good.
So anyway, Tom Cruise didn't make it.
Yeah. But let's talk about who did make it.
Let's talk about who did make it.
So Everything, Everywhere, All at Once just kind of made the show its own.
It was a steamroller.
And so that was not my favorite movie. I'm okay with it. I enjoyed it. I probably need to rewatch it just to see how I feel after all of this. And I have no problem with it winning Best Picture whatsoever. I'm like, fine, it's very unique, it's very different, it has a great message, blah, blah, blah. My question to you guys, though, is was it amazing enough to be something that swept everything? Because that's where I don't agree with what happened.
Well, was there any award that it won that you think had a more deserving contender in that category?
Yeah, I mean, I thought the Jamie Lee Curtis win was pretty strange.
Now, do you really?
I think it's a career win.
Yeah,
and I think she's
that's
great,
what it is.
But
yeah.
I don't like that. I think you got to honor the best performance.
Who was that?
Of the year. I'm good with either Angela Bassett,
yeah,
which you could have also argued was a career win.
Right,
and of
exactly.
course, Carrie Condon was my favorite. And there was a bit of a push at the end. I thought she was unbelievable in Banshees of Inisherin.
And is it Stephanie Sue?
Yeah.
Most pushback I've heard is that there were two supporting actresses nominated from Everything Everywhere All at Once, mm-hmm. and Jamie Lee Curtis was the lesser of those two performances. Mm. The younger actress, Stephanie Hsu, had more lines and was a more pivotal element of the story and just did a better job.
Well, and she's the heart of that movie because there's at times where that character is actually the villain, and then there's at times where that character is the heart, and it's trained. It transforms in front of your eyes pretty rapidly.
Right.
So that was a very complex role she had to deal with.
It was a legacy kind of thing, though, because every Jamie Lee Curtis film you have ever seen, she is not like she was in Everything Everywhere
All at Once. That's true.
That was a completely unique experience. Yeah,
as
an actor making a real turn on who they are, I think that she does deserve
And if you
that.
Were looking at Everything Everywhere All at Once as a genre film, as like the sci-fi, multi-dimensional movies that don't generally get honored at the Academy Awards – well, who better to give an award alongside than the queen of genre films, right? Like her first movie ever was Halloween, which kicked off the horror genre. Right. She's been in comedies and all sorts of things.
Her time with the Fish Called Wanda, Fierce Creatures, those were great.
True Lies was great. She's great in that.
48 Hours.
Yeah. The Lovable Prostitute. Yeah. You know, I'd like to be a typecast in Hollywood.
Hooker with a heart. It's been done over and over again.
Yeah, well, her and Julia Roberts are the two happy hookers with a heart of all time. Okay, fair enough. So before we move off of this, though, I mentioned this last night, that Angela Bassett caught so much grief for her genuine emotional response to losing.
Yeah, I think everyone likes to jump on when you see a rich, powerful person, and then they show a moment of like real emotion, right? Because it's all played up in this frivolity of like we're going to clap and applaud. So I think whenever you see a real moment captured, everyone's just going to jump on this. I remember with Michael Keaton when he lost Best Actor to Eddie Redmayne for Theory of Everything and Michael Keaton being a Birdman. And there was the thing where like he was putting back his speech in his pocket. And everyone caught it and everyone's making fun and making jokes. You know, it's just an easy target. Well, but it was there.
But Angela Bassett also didn't stand. For the standing ovation. It's one thing to be caught with a moment of sheer disappointment and sadness when they didn't call your name. But when everybody is standing and applauding the winner and you still sit down, then you're looking a little on the petty side.
I agree, but I'm going to cut her some slack.
Me too. I mean,
I would have liked her to support another career win because Jamie Lee Curtis's career has been really important, just as hers has. I'm not saying who's been more important, but it would have been nice if like, well, okay, at least I didn't lose to Stephanie Hsu, who's been acting for 4 years.
4 minutes, yeah.
You know?
Fair enough.
Can I tell you something else I didn't like about the Oscars?
Please.
Well, so I thought the show really dragged, which I think a lot of people could attest to.
I think so, too.
I disagree.
Okay. And maybe you can defend it. I generally see how these award shows go is first hour is really high. It's full of strong energy. Just, you know, you have a couple of cool awards early and just things are buzzing. Right. Second hour, lulls.
And then you finish strong.
And it's used to be kind of up to the host. And now it's just kind of up to how well you deliver the final awards, how good are the final speeches. And that's the make or break hour.
Right.
Of course, we got a bonus hour with the Oscars. It's four now. but I thought it was very strange how they made the actual awards come out. So they started with animated feature.
Yeah, that was unusual. That never happened.
I was okay with it first because I was like, all right, well, Guillermo del Toro was winning this and we all knew that. Yeah. And then they go into supporting actor. Well, we all knew Ke-Huy Quan was going to win that. So they got two big awards that had pretty lopsided races in them. But then they kind of kept rolling in to the point where once you got to script and best actor and actress, the awards leading up to it were song and costumes. I'm like, why are we still here by hour three?
Extra awards in, and they explained it at the top why they were going to do that.
That's great.
You got your wish, by the way. Last week you were talking about how you wish that they would explain what the categories were, and they did all of that.
Yes, so they did it particularly once with Michael B. Jordan and Jonathan Majors, where they gave a little bit of a cinematography demonstration. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was awesome. This is a really cool way to show the audience what we're talking about specifically.
Right. Why it matters and why this artist's work made the difference in this film.
The theater just was not buying it. It was so quiet. They were just like, can we move on?
It's funny because when you talked last week about this and Kimmel asked, for some advice. He said, look, what I was told by Billy Crystal was don't play the home audience. Play to the room. Play your comedy to the room. Because if the room doesn't get it, it's a dead fish laying there and nobody at home cares.
And that stunt was particularly for the audience, which is what I'm talking about. Right. Didn't play to the room.
Didn't work for the room. I love the old editing equipment they had on stage and the woman up there cutting tape and whatnot. And I love that they had the huge camera and then showed just how big and they had to cut a hole in the floor.
Right.
And so this is how they had to do it back in the day. But my favorite part was Cocaine Bear. I mean, cinematography or digital editing, this is what my movie would have looked like. Some clown in a stupid bear suit. It showed what kind of magic they can really do.
So let's segue a little bit into this, because there was a lot of movies that didn't relate to the Oscars in the Oscars. Particularly, we had basically a trailer for The Little Mermaid in the middle of the show.
That was odd. I figured that's because Disney owns ABC.
Oh, 100%.
And this was Disney saying, look, we get to do this. You're showing this. This is on. We're giving you this time, or you're buying this time, or however it works. But we're going to do this.
But we got punked twice. Because not only did Melissa McCarthy and Halle Bailey, is the name of the actress playing Ariel in the live-action Little Mermaid. And they come out, and they're like, like they're going to do an award.
It looked like that.
They're going to present an award. And now here's a trailer.
Right.
Here's a commercial.
Or you know what they could have done? Hey, we're the two new stars of Little Mermaid. We're giving out the Oscar for visual effects. And you can still talk about visual effects in reference to your Little Mermaid movie.
That would be great.
But it was just a setup for a commercial. Yeah. And then they bring Morgan Freeman out.
Oh.
Who is that?
Margot Robbie.
Margot Robbie.
Yeah.
And it's a commercial for Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
And I get it. I get it. You know, they're reminding people just what movies have meant to society, to culture. You know, I get it, but we had celebrity VIP setups for two commercials.
Yeah.
I'd never seen anything like that before, but I was mystified as to why they were doing that on a show that's already too damn long.
Well, and for me, because I figure most people who watch the Oscars or are tuning into the Oscars have not seen all the movies, particularly the Best Picture nominees. More than fine. Like, you should not be expected to watch all those in a busy life. Like, I get it.
Right.
So if you're going into the Oscars like, hey, I watched Top Gun Maverick, which I really enjoyed. I'm glad I got all the nominations. And then I went out of my way to watch Everything Everywhere All at Once because it made a lot of noise. And then I'm going to check out the rest of this show. I think you need to do a better job almost advertising the films that are getting awarded so people can tune in and check in later. I didn't get a great vibe of what all the nominees were.
No, from the clip they showed?
The clips. And they had some montages and they had some things like that. But did people really were like, oh, now I'm really interested in Triangle of Sadness? I'm like, I didn't really see a lot.
I don't know what the movie's about.
And I think you should spend a little bit more time like, hey, this is Banshees of Inisherin, you know?
Right.
Maybe people on their first watch didn't get it, and you have a little bit more to that. And I think tying into the last hour of the show, I would much rather – the show felt like it was rushing to get to the end.
Yeah.
And that was when you're giving out the big awards, and I never liked that. I think you got to cram a lot of awards in that middle hour that drags, and then you got like six awards in the final hour that you can kind of breathe in. Let me see a little Cate Blanchett and Tar. Yeah, I have so many people in my life I'm trying to make watch that movie. You know, it would be a great way if the Oscars, if they're tuning in and they see a two-minute clip and they're like, yeah, that looks really good. That looks really good. Yeah.
Did you think they were rushing, though, in that last hour?
It felt like that to me, but maybe that's just me.
Well, I thought it was less, because to me it's always been that way. They always rush. This time they weren't playing people off with music. I was still waiting for those dancers to come.
A great joke missed. A great opportunity missed.
Yeah.
Coming out, we're going to dance you off with these dancers, and nobody, not even once,
but they didn't
got danced
out.
Off. Here we are, our other player. We're getting played off right now. You're
thanks
the bomb,
so much.
Dude. You are awesome.
They didn't sub out the presenter, which had a feeling that we were rushing. It's like, here's actor, here's actress, here we go. Boom.
But that's not, and they didn't have a man doing the actress and a woman doing actor, which is usually
tradition. They just had them both out there doing their thing.
I did like that they would bring two hosts out and do two different categories.
Yeah.
I mean, because like you said, the public demanded that everybody get their moment in the sun. And was it the public demanding that, or was it the Academy demanding that? I mean, they said, you asked for it. You asked that we
I think all, nerdy film
all
Twitter.
The exactly. All the categories be represented on stage.
Oh, the Academy members, sure.
Not the people watching at home.
No.
Again,
wanna,
which audience are you playing to?
You want to trim a half hour from the show?
Tonight, sure.
Cut the song.
Oh, I'm sorry. when we come back, I'm with them. I'm with them on
cut
that
the
one.
Song.
I'm with them
the
on
best.
That.
Original songs?
Yes.
Heck no.
It used to be
all right, when we get back, we'll get into this.
We'll talk about it. It's Frank Sumrall's with us from MyNorthWest.com. Lisa Brooks. Matt, speak up, buddy. I want to know what you think about this stuff, too. It's Cairo Nights. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights.
We need jingles, dude. We need to make some jingles. I'm Spike O'Neill. I'm with Matt Butler. The music is such a part of what we do. We need jingles. Frank Semmel's joining us to recap and re-recap the Oscars. Lisa Brooks is hanging out, too. Guys just love when you hang out. So let's do this real quick before we move on to the other subject. I'm with Frank. I think the songs have become cumbersome.
Why?
They've
already cut them down.
Have they?
Yes.
How so?
They are shortened. Generally, they take a verse out or something.
Oh, they were already abbreviated editions?
Yes.
Abridged, I guess, is the correct terminology for that?
Yes.
I hadn't realized that because that was my suggestion. And it still feels too long?
Why does it feel too long? You just don't know the song, so you're not. As a songwriter, I think that to me, that would be the coolest Oscar to win. You know,
as
best
song,
original
okay.
song. Oh, my gosh. That would be the greatest Oscar to win. And the productions were gorgeous.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think you guys are completely wrong about it.
That's why you're here. And your opinion is of no less value than mine.
And that's why we need your opinion.
Seriously.
Because it's not, it'd just be an echo chamber,
and there'd be no music next year, and the Oscars would suck.
As much as you love music, I'm very surprised you would say that.
Maybe it was the songs last night that didn't move me.
Even the one from RRR.
That was so cool. That one I love, but it was, I loved that. I really did, because it was so uniquely different than anything I've ever heard before.
Yeah.
The Gaga number.
It was beautiful.
Okay. You're right. It just didn't do anything for me.
Okay. It wasn't your kind of music.
Wasn't my cup of tea.
Okay.
Neither was the it was
Okay.
Thank you.
My question, too, is it one of the 20-something most important things to celebrate in a movie at this point?
What?
It's one of the 22 Oscars that we have.
Well, sure.
I don't know. I mean, it feels like they struggled to get to five nominees. I understand the award when it had its time and place, when so many more musicals and original songs are being made for movies. The Lady Gaga song wasn't even in Top Gun. That's an end credit song.
Most of
that's
them,
not even in the movie.
A lot of them generally are end credit songs.
Or Bond songs that open the film.
Right. You know, like, yeah. It's a little different than when the Oscar was created and these were numbers and songs made specifically for the movie.
Well, maybe this year wasn't a year where there were that many great songs.
But
we had Diane Warren, thank goodness, and she finally got her special Oscar after being nominated, 13 times?
Yeah, she's got
times.
A ridiculous amount.
She has a collection of hit songs that is, you know, longer than my arm. You know, it's just amazing.
But that segment of the Oscars always feels like the Super Bowl, including a superstar at halftime to put on a show. But the problem is when you nail the performer and she or he is playing the hits, that everyone has a great time. We're here. It's I know you said the shortens. Is it a 20-minute award, give or take, to get through the performances, to get through the nominees, to get through the speech? If you're just looking at trimming the award, that's a big target to figure out.
Frank, I already learned to shut up when Lisa
was okay, so we can move on. We'll
I don't
move
know
on
why you're going to keep beating this dead horse. You can saddle up that horse all you want to, but it ain't going nowhere.
We'll move on. We don't need to worry about it. Here's an idea. We were talking about this before on how to figure out the genders of actors
as a
future category. What if you do performance based on a fictional character versus performance based on a real life character? Five and five.
Are there enough performances based on real life
characters? I would wonder about filling out the category with not worthy nominees.
It might be a little bit tougher, but I do think it is such a huge part of the industry now, alongside comic book movies, is biopic movies.
There have been a lot more. I mean, as Hollywood has become more and more stressed to find original stories. I mean, there's a Joe Frazier. Is it a Joe Frazier or a George Foreman movie coming out? I can't even remember
Foreman,
which one. There's a George Foreman movie coming out. Okay. Really?
I think Dennis Quaid.
Have we kind of hit the bottom of real life people movies? Frank's right.
I think Dennis Quaid is going to play Reagan. That's going to be
really
bizarre to watch. But when I did a segment.
Better him than Randy.
There you go. I did a segment where we were pitching movies coming out in 2023, and we noticed a lot of them, Napoleon. I think we had Presley's Wife. There's a lot of these that they're based on real people. And I get tired. I think they say like 7 of the last 10 winners have been based on real people. And this is a bad Oscars to talk about it because original characters, fictional characters won this time.
Yeah, they rolled the day.
But the trend has always been you play a historical figure, most likely musician, but even in Will Smith's case where he's just
King Richard.
You win it that way when people like Benedict Cumberbatch just ran circles around.
Well, that kind of closes two circles for me.
Okay.
We get a real life movie, but they've already cast Napoleon because I think Pauly Shore would be
perfect.
Your
guy Joaquin.
Right, but Pauly Shore would be perfect for Napoleon. And we're trying to figure out how to get Pauly Shore's name in the news because, you know, maybe the biggest slap of the night, if I can call it that. Who did Jimmy Kimmel offend more? Was it Tom Cruise by calling him out for not being there? Was it Will Smith for how many times the slap reference came up Sunday night? I thought too many.
Really?
See, I thought too many. Or Pauly Shore when he mentioned his Encino Man choke. That, you know, Kehi Kwan and Brendan Fraser were here. He knew he was having a bad night, Pauly Shore.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Pauly Shore finally gets a phone call today. Somebody cares what Pauly Shore thinks. And he's like, why are you going to be so mean? You know, I'm just being, I was always cool. I put my heart in my movies. And he did. I got to tell you, I've enjoyed some Pauly Shore movies over the year.
You have?
I love Biodome. I loved Son-in-Law.
Wow.
Those were a couple of really genuinely funny movies.
Okay.
He made a few dogs, but who hasn't? But I really...
You might be with Lisa on the original songs here for this one.
Fair enough. I'll drop my Pauly Shore. I won't die on that hill.
No, it's okay.
No. Next.
But speaking of actors we really like, I would like you to talk about Hugh Grant. Your Notting Hill star. He was. He made some waves, and I want to hear what you think about that.
I think about 25 years ago or more, he ended up really hating everything having to do with making movies and realizes there's nothing else he can do and just hates the public and hates the show and hates every aspect of it. Yeah, he was interviewed by, was it Ashley Graham?
Ashley Graham.
Yeah. By the way, fashion mistake. Ashley Graham, I love you and respect you, but man, you should have picked something better than black underwear and a something over it to wear to interview.
Yeah.
But Hugh Grant, you know, he's a jerk. And he's just saying, he's just being Hugh Grant at this point. I don't think he cares about anything or anyone at this point and just is doing this to get through.
Well,
no defense of Hugh Grant. He can be a butthole. He really can be. And there's the list of actresses who will no longer work with Hugh Grant is longer than my arm.
That's scary.
But Ashley Graham, really, you know, what'd you think about this movie? He's like, I don't know. I was in it for 3 seconds.
Yeah.
You don't ask him that question. You should do a little homework about who you're talking to and know, you know, who are you wearing tonight? You know, a suit, my tailor. He wasn't wearing a designer. I mean, you know, that's a little on Ashley Graham. He was an a-hole.
Well,
to her. He was a rude British. He wasn't being British. He was just being rude.
Yeah, he was being him.
Yeah, he was being.
And most people have their answers. They're prepared for it. They smile. And he just doesn't care anymore.
Yeah.
And maybe she could have asked, what would you ask Hugh Grant that night? I don't know what you would ask. When's your next good movie coming out?
Oh, man.
Tell me more about Paddington 3.
Yeah.
Do you feel bad that you're
allowed to go through life looking like this while actresses are showing the curb when they hit 35?
Yeah.
But to set it up, just in case people aren't familiar with what happened, basically he makes a reference because she's like, oh, are you happy to be here and all the frivolous activity? And he calls it Vanity Fair, right? Or something that.
Yeah.
You know, being a posh remark, whatever. I get it. He's well read. And so she obviously interpreted that.
Did you think that's what he meant? Oh. Okay.
I think he meant just a Vanity Fair, as in like, oh, we're all the elites are hanging out in frivolity, right?
Oh.
And I think she saw that as, oh, Vanity Fair, the hosts of the after Oscars
that's
party.
I
can't wait.
Meant. That's what I thought he didn't
and then
mean that?
You see like his eyes when she responds that way? Just kind of light up.
He's like, oh,
and he's
God,
like,
I got one.
He looks like a shark. And he's just like, I am going to eat you up and spit you out now. Yeah, and so then he went after her.
Yeah,
with
every question.
And I don't
snarked.
Mean like he was attacking her. He was just really curt and really,
wow.
really
I was completely lost
with
that
all his answers. And so everyone was talking about it. Like I said, guys, it was a boring show. We didn't have much to talk about.
Yeah, seriously.
So Hugh Grant being
a British bunghole.
You know, thank you for saying that.
You betcha.
For me.
That's what I do.
You know, that was one of the more entertaining things of the night.
That is a low watermark.
Wow.
Did you enjoy the red carpets or the
champagne, beige carpet?
The champagne
carpet. I just want to say Angela Bassett, best gown
beautiful,
of the night.
Beautiful,
purple,
beautiful look.
Everything was gorgeous. The jewelry was gorgeous. The hair was gorgeous.
And she didn't even block anybody's view.
And she didn't.
Even when everybody was standing up for Jamie Lee Curtis, she sat courteously
well,
through that as well.
That, yes.
When we come back, Frank, let's talk about, there's some movie news.
We got some breaking news like 30 minutes before the show.
Not a rehash of the Oscars.
One of the most prestigious filmmakers of our time has announced a new project.
Okay, we'll have that when we come back. Cairo Nights. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Spike O'Neill along with Matt Butler and Frank Summerall is with us. And just to recap the Oscars, nothing I saw Sunday night made me want to go see one of these movies as much as you did, Frank, talking about movies like Tar, which I want to go see.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I saw a little bit of Tar, promotional wise, from the Oscars, from the nominations that when Cate Blanchett was nominated for Best Actress and when the film was nominated for Best Film. But it's your description of it that really makes me want to go see it. So thank you.
Anytime. I hope the Academy showcases what they are attempting to showcase much better.
Yeah. That's what the Oscars are for. They are to, of course, award and reward those high watermarks in filmmaking, but it's basically a 4-hour commercial for go to the movies. Do your job, Academy.
Come on, Cruz.
Sell us.
Show up.
Right, Tom. So who's got breaking news? What's coming down the pipeline?
So Tarantino has announced his 10th film. It's going to be called The Movie Critic. He's set to, so I think when he usually makes an announcement like this, he's already written it at this point.
Okay.
So he's set to shoot it this fall. It's supposed to be set in 70s LA, typical for him at this point in his career. It's supposed to have a female lead at its center. If you're thinking movie critic, who might that be? People are starting to wonder. And of course, if you don't know this about Tarantino, he has said this ever since he got big in the 90s. I'm making 10 movies and then I'm out. This is the 10th and final movie.
Really?
Yeah. If you count, you have to count both Kill Bills as one. That's his little
rule.
Because he technically has 10 now. And then with that, he'll be done. I don't know if we believe it. I don't know if he'll come back. He does have a couple of young kids. So if this is really like, I'm going to become a dad for the next 15 years.
Maybe. That interesting point. He's young enough to walk away for 15 years. But he's got enough of the bug to come back and make another movie.
Well,
and
that's
pipe.
Where I'm not really buying
the finale it, thing.
Yes, because he has such an itch.
Yeah.
And
I don't think anybody loves, well, Spielberg, of course, loves the movies as much.
Right, because everyone's wondering now after The Fablemans, is he going to be done? And I've been hearing, nah, he'll make something else. This is what he's going to do.
What else would he do?
Yeah.
Like Cameron, what else would he do? Tarantino, what else are you going to do? Well, Raise Your Kids is a pretty good gig to get into.
When he's got the successful podcast going, so he can slow down a little bit. But even still, like, he really fell into the lore of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, so much so that he made the film. I think he wrote a book for it. And I think he wrote a Broadway play that never came to be, but
really?
He just has it written, ready to go.
Wow.
Because that's how this guy functions.
Wow.
Yeah. And so there's not a lot of news about this film announcement other than everyone's going to get really excited for Tarantino's next project. I have two things that I found interesting coming off of this. One is he's making this announcement. Most likely it sounds like he's going to follow Scorsese because we were all excited about Killers of the Flower Moon, Leonardo, Scorsese's film that's coming out later this year. So it makes sense. I want to announce my movie. We'll come out the year later. We'll just compete with someone else. And then secondly, the announcement came that the film doesn't have a studio company behind it. And usually he works with Sony. He used to work with Harvey Weinstein for a long time before that blew up. I want to throw out an idea since you know I like the corporate stuff.
Okay.
A24, the film studio behind Everything Everywhere All at Once, the studio that's only existed for 10 years at this point and has won 2 Best Picture Oscars.
Wow.
Could they link up all of a sudden A24? Because the biggest movie they ever made, Everything Everywhere All at Once, made $100 million. That's not a lot of money for Tarantino.
It's really not. Well, but that's going to change, though.
But that's going to change?
Yeah.
Could they saddle with him? Does Tarantino want to saddle himself with a studio that's really invested in the Oscars? I think yes. He really cares about Oscars and cares about winning them, and he cares about winning one more than anything. He wants to win screenplay Oscars.
Interesting.
He wants the screenplay Oscar to rename the Quentin.
Does he have any Oscars?
He's got 2.
For directing?
For writing. For Pulp Fiction and Django.
Okay.
He's got a couple other writing noms, a couple directing noms, and
picture
noms.
Okay,
but
he won them both for writing.
But if he's looking at himself like, I keep striking out with the Academy, you know who didn't? A24.
He's going to get on a
winning
horse.
The biggest sweep in a decade that we didn't see coming.
Interesting.
Maybe you should saddle up with them.
Buddy, I love movies. I love award season because of you. Frank Summerall from MyNorthwest.com. I know you didn't fare well in your predictions, but that's okay.
I did okay.
I
did okay.
You better than you thought.
The acting. So usually like 14 out of 22 is not a great batting average for this, but it's just the acting ones. Everything else I'll live with.
Okay, fair enough.
I did well there.
I am my friend. It's Cairo Knights. I'm Spike O'Neill with Matt Butler. Thanks, Frank. We'll be back right after these.